we should try to cultivate and develop our spiritual perfections. Because once we are born, this world is full of aging, illness, and death. What causes us to remain deluded is ignorance itself. This ignorance leads us to perform actions of karma. The Buddha teaches us to abandon evil, wrongdoing, the bad. But why is it that people cannot abandon evil, or can only abandon it a little? It's because they do not see the harm in what they are doing as being evil. Because what is evil, wrongdoing, is something that people who are still deluded like to do. They like doing those things as a habit. Defilements cause us to perform actions, and those actions bring about the results of karma. The results of karma then give rise to defilements again, life after life. It continues like that. So there are the things that we like, but that aren't beneficial for us. That liking is ignorance and delusion, which causes us to become attached to actions called evil, bad, which bring heat and suffering. They bring heat. When we do them, they may bring happiness in the present, but they are causes of suffering in the future. Yet in terms of Dhamma, wherever evil is done, the heart also becomes troubled there. But sometimes we become deluded and do not understand. Therefore, the Buddha came to remind us again and establish the principle on Magga Puja Day, telling us to try to abandon evil, wrongdoing. Once we abandon it, the mind becomes comfortable, relaxed, and clear, and we will know how to cultivate merit. Even giving charity is not easy, because stinginess constantly tries to hold us back, pulling and clinging to the wealth of this world so that we will remain attached to it forever. We are unwilling to share, unwilling to give to anyone, because we fear it will be depleted and will have nothing left. But the Buddha did not teach us to make merit to that extent. He taught us to give only a portion, to give wisely. We must also keep a large portion for ourselves to use in our daily life, to care for our parents and children, to use when we fall ill, and to use in our trade, business, and livelihood. We give so that a heart of generosity can arise. And when we give often, it becomes easy to do without difficulty. For example, offering food to the monks is something we can do easily. But for those who still lack faith, it is also difficult to do, not easy. Or the moral precepts that we can keep. We undertake the 5 precepts on observance days and can keep them every day. For some people who have never practiced keeping the 5 precepts, it is difficult because delusion holds them back, making them see their own benefit as more important. Or it leads to killing and making war against one another, causing many people to die, and thus the world cannot have peace. If people simply kept the 5 precepts, the world would already become peaceful and happy everywhere. And to the higher level is practicing meditation, which is even more difficult, because we have not trained before in it, and have not developed the habit. But those who have practiced meditation, and have tasted the flavor of samadhi, concentration, it is that calmness where the mind becomes distant from the things that obstruct it, which usually control over our minds, such as sensual desire, ill will, restlessness, doubt, drowsiness, irritation. These are things that have long been companions to our mind. They are close companions and do not easily allow our mind to leave them, always trying to keep our mind under their control. But when we see that these things arise as being evil, unwholesome states in the mind, we try to abandon them little by little, and put effort in practicing meditation. Eventually, it can be done through effort, through perseverance, and through seeing the benefit of abandoning that evil in body and speech. These are the coarse defilements, and then we establish ourselves in sila, morality. Then we try to abandon the more subtle defilements, which are the disturbances in the mind. If we have never meditated before, when we sit and close our eyes, we will see that the mind keeps thinking, spinning rapidly, full of agitation, hot and fast. Seeing the harm in that, we try to tame the mind through meditation, through the mental repetition of Butto, Dhammo, Sangho, or by contemplating a certain teaching of the Dhamma so that the mind becomes calm. Some may contemplate the impermanence of life, that people are born and must die. Whether dying sooner or later, it depends on karma. But in any case, death will come, and we don't know the day of our death. Reflecting in this way, the mind can become calm. This is called contemplation leading to calmness. Recalling the virtues of the perfectly self-awakened Buddha, that he is pure and liberated, and possessing immeasurable loving-kindness and compassion. But when we look more deeply, we see that even the Buddha himself passed away into parinibbana. Therefore, we cannot be careless. All the noble disciples in the time of the Buddha, and even in later times, have also entered nibbana. This shows that sankhara, conditioned phenomena, cannot remain permanently. When we contemplate this, the mind becomes calm. It is through contemplation the mind becomes more still. When the mind becomes still and somewhat peaceful, we can see the truth of life, that things arise, remain for a while. There is change as being something natural. We can see that people are born and then die. But when it is others who die, it is not us dying, and so we may not feel any deep sense of dispassion or urgency. But when wisdom arises and we feel a sense of spiritual urgency, the mind withdraws inwards and becomes calmed and cool. This is the training of the mind that leads to samadhi, concentration. Then we begin to understand more clearly that in the end, in truth, no one is born and no one dies. This leads to the realization of emptiness. The mind can let go of conditioned formations of our body and mind, even if it is only temporarily. This is called a temporary experience of nibbana. We teach our mind in this way, making it clearer, so that we will not remain lost in ignorance forever, and we can overcome delusion to some extent. Just as the Buddha attained enlightenment rightly by himself, we also come to understand following him to some extent. The Buddha realized the Four Noble Truths and left his teachings in this world. If we do not practice or make an effort, it is completely useless. There will only be birth and death again and again. It is said that the pile of our bones from this would be higher than the great mountains. But now we have come to know and learn, and we practice according to the Buddha's teachings and pay homage to the Buddha. Most of us have gone to India, and it is a joy to see the places where the Buddha was born, where he taught the Dhamma, where he attained enlightenment, and where he entered parinibbana. Having seen those places, faith and devotion arise, realizing that the Buddha truly existed. He was born here, practiced austerities here, attained enlightenment here, taught the Dhamma here, and entered final parinibbana here. We have gone to the place where the Buddha delivered the Avada Patimokkha, where 1,250 monks, all arahants, gathered to listen to the Dhamma. There he established the principles and teachings which occurred only once in the dispensation of the perfectly self-awakened Buddha. The Buddha possessed great glory and immeasurable compassion. The Buddha gave great benefit to the world and brought light to all beings. When we see it like this, joy in the Dhamma and concentration arise. We may even see and understand the Dhamma while visiting the four sacred places of pilgrimage. Or if we experience joy in the Dhamma now and continue to cultivate our perfections, then one day, in some lifetime, we will encounter the teachings of the perfectly self-awakened Buddha, or we'll meet with a Buddha who teaches the Dhamma. Then we'll be able to understand and realize the Dhamma easily, without difficulty. This is because we have cultivated and developed our perfections through many lifetimes. Therefore, since we have been born into this life, we should not let it pass in vain. We should strive to abandon evil, cultivate merit, and purify the mind. The Dhamma is not complicated, though it is profound. If one does not practice it, one cannot understand it clearly. Even if we hear the teachings every year, study and read them, it is only one type of wisdom. But to understand deeply, we must put them into practice. Only then will our doubts disappear, and we will know what it means to realize and see the Dhamma. Morality, sila, must appear in the heart, generosity must be present, and giving must become a normal practice. So, whether Thai Buddhist or Buddhists around the world, they are givers, people of sacrifice, people whose hearts support and sustain Buddhism so that it may endure for a long time. They make merit by offering requisites and all the necessary things so that the monks can devote themselves seriously to meditation practice in order to know and see the Dhamma as taught by the Buddha. Venerable Ajahn Chah used to say, "The Dhamma lies on the side of death. If you do not die, you must truly practice well. If you cannot practice well, then let it die." He guided his disciples to train and practice, establishing a strong foundation. Many monks and novices who practiced meditation with Venerable Ajahn Chah with sincerity came to know and see the Dhamma, and many became firmly established in morality. Both lay people in the time when Ajahn Chah was alive, and people in the present time can also strive and practice in the same way. Because the Dhamma, as he said, never becomes outdated, even though the world advances in many kinds of technology. But the human mind does not advance along with the world. If the world progresses, but we do not practice, our minds will become even darker than before. Patience becomes less, perseverance becomes less, because people become absorbed in the conveniences and developments of the world, and the human mind becomes filled with more desire. People want everything to be faster. If they want to know something, they want to know it quickly. They want to realize the Dhamma quickly, without patience and without practicing. Like students who asked Venerable Ajahn Chah about a shortcut, a fast way, how to do it. Venerable Ajahn Chah replied, "The shortcut is to do nothing at all." When I heard that, my head almost exploded as well. If we do nothing at all, how can we reach the goal? But as we practice, we begin to understand that doing nothing at all belongs to those who have already attained. It is like someone who has already eaten and is full. There's no need to eat again. They are full already, full with the Dhamma. They have the food of Dhamma, full for a long time without hunger again. But for practitioners who still need to train, they still need food. the food of the heart, generosity, morality, and meditation. These make the heart full and complete. The heart becomes joyful and fulfilled. The more we know and see the truth with wisdom, seeing that form and mind are impermanent, unsatisfactory, and not self, then the heart can feel fulfilled for 3 days and 3 nights even. Joy may last for a month or several months, even 6 months. The heart remains full like that. The more one knows and sees the Dhamma, it is even higher than ordinary joy because it is wisdom. It is a deep fullness through liberation, through freedom, understanding, and through the abandoning of the mental fetters. In the beginning, all of us are able to do this. The thing that binds our hearts is the sense of self, but we try to practice diligently. When we give alms, we are already letting go of the self. When we keep precepts, we let go of the self, of me and others. The Buddha taught with wisdom. He taught generosity and sila, morality, explaining their many benefits, and we think that we will gain merit and gain much. He also taught further that the benefits of generosity, morality, and meditation indeed are many. Later, he showed that the benefits of generosity and morality lead to heaven, to happiness and comfort. Yet this happiness and comfort still lead us to continue wandering in birth and death, accumulating merit and goodness again and again. We are still born, age, fall ill, and die. It does not end. Therefore, he taught further that we must learn and practice renunciation. Meditation practice is the renunciation that occurs within our own minds. When the mind holds renunciation, it becomes peaceful, investigates inwardly, and wisdom arises along with true knowledge. This knowledge is not merely thinking. Thinking is not true knowledge. In the beginning, we may think in order to know, but later there's no need to think. Knowledge arises clearly by itself, and we can let go of the self, of me and others. In this way, we can clearly recollect the virtue of the Buddha within our hearts, and the result will arise within our minds. We will reduce heedlessness in this life, in this very lifetime. We will see that the Dhamma that arises is not something whose results appear only in the future. When we practice today, we receive the results today. When we eat today, we are full today. When the weather is hot and we bathe now, we feel cool now. When the weather is cold and we have a heater, we become warm right here as well. So it depends on our practice. In the beginning, homage is done through material offerings, with flowers, fragrances, incense, and candles. After that, we move to practice as homage. Walking meditation, walking around the main Buddha image, walking in different places. Even at home, we can sit in meditation and give homage to the perfectly self-awakened Buddha. This is homage through our practice, and at the highest level, it is homage through cultivating the mind of morality, concentration, and wisdom. When we abandon evil, cultivate merit, and purify the mind, that is true homage through practice, as praised by the Buddha, who wished for us to give homage to him through our practice. Even if flowers were offered to him in such abundance that they piled up like great mountains, he would not delight in that as much as one giving their practice in homage. This is the great compassion that he has shown towards us. May all of you study the Dhamma deeply and practice according to his teachings, and then you will experience spiritual growth and prosperity, the ending of suffering, and meet with genuine happiness in your lives. Let us recollect this important day in the Buddha's dispensation, the day of Magga Puja. May you all grow in the Dhamma.